Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents How to Kiss Your Enemy, a Sweet Romantic Comedy by Jenny Proctor. Narrated by Philip Alces and Lydia Dornay. Chapter 1. Lennox. Tatum freaking Elliot. Thousands of chefs in America, and my sister hires her. I'd like to think I've grown up over the years, that since I graduated from culinary school, I've left behind petty rivalries and schoolyard competitions. But as I watch a black SUV slowly meander down the main drive of Stonebrook Farm, nerves swirling in my gut, I'm beginning to wonder. I've prepared myself for this moment. I've talked it through with my brothers. I've insisted to my sister, over and over, that, despite my initial freak-out when she hired the Tatum Elliot to be the new catering chef at the commercial farm and event center my family owns, I would be fine. Fine with a capital F, because I'm totally chill. A fully grown adult who is perfectly capable of leaving my history with Tatum in the past, so we can get along like mature, civilized adults. I reach up and run a hand across my beard, then stick a finger under the neck of my chef's coat, pulling the fabric away from my skin. Has it always felt so tight? So stiff? I might as well be wearing the too small snowsuit my grandmother gave me for Christmas the year I turned 7. I had nightmares about that thing suffocating me for weeks. Outside, the black Mercedes S-Class SUV rolls to a stop. It figures she's still driving a Mercedes. She had one back in school, too. With the winter sun shining down on the windshield, the glare keeps me from actually seeing whoever is driving the car. But it has to be Tatum. The U-Haul trailer hitched to the back of her SUV and the California license plate affixed to her front bumper are evidence enough. I can't believe she's really here. Not that I have any room to argue. Olivia gave me the chance to sit in on the interviews and offer opinions about who I thought would best fit the Stonebrook Farm culture. I'm the idiot who was too caught up in my own stuff to bother. But how was I supposed to know the chef who, 9 years ago, snarkily signed my graduation card, "So happy to never see you again," would apply for a job here of all places? Whatever her reasons for taking a job far below her pedigree, the farm needs a catering chef, and Tatum is who my sister hired. Olivia and my oldest brother Perry run Stonebrook together, and they do a good job of it. So I have no choice but to get on board and keep my petty complaints to myself. "What's cooking, chef?" Zach, my sous chef, appears beside me, his gaze following mine to the SUV outside. "Who's that?" I run a hand across my jaw and give my shoulders a roll, a lame attempt to release the tension building there. "The new catering chef," I finally say. "She's moving in today." Adding an apartment above the catering kitchen was a strategic decision my parents made 20 years ago, hoping the free housing would lure quality chefs out to Silver Creek. Bet they never guessed they'd get someone as famous as Tatum Elliot. Or sort of famous, anyway. I can't imagine what she's going to think of the place after the lifestyle she grew up with. When I first moved home, the apartment was vacant, so I crashed there for a few months. It isn't a bad place to live, by any stretch. It's small, but it's clean and recently updated. I would have happily stayed longer, had it not been on the family farm. Living at work when work is a family-run business? Let's just say that was a lot of togetherness. Another minute goes by without Tatum getting out of her car, and I half wonder if I should go out and greet her, but I quickly dismiss the thought. This is Olivia's deal, not mine. I promised my sister I wouldn't get in the way of Tatum doing her job, but that doesn't mean I have to go out and give her some grand welcome. That would require me to pretend like I'm happy she's here. My watch vibrates with a text, and I glance down to read it. Olivia,
Tatum has arrived. On my way to meet her now. Can you make sure her kitchen is ready?
I ignore the request, only because this is Olivia being Olivia, worrying like only she can. Tatum's kitchen is fine, cleaned yesterday, after the sous chef and the rest of the catering staff prepared a farewell breakfast for a group of Asheville yoga instructors who booked the farm for a 3-day retreat. There aren't any events today, so Tatum will find her kitchen empty and exactly like her staff left it. That's one point I can be happy about. Tatum and I won't be sharing a kitchen, even if we are working in the same building. The only overlap between Stonebrook's catering kitchen and my farm-to-table full-service restaurant is an enormous walk-in refrigerator, a little bit of shared pantry space, the loading dock and dumpsters out back, and a staff locker room. Outside, Tatum finally climbs out of her car. She's wearing street clothes, jeans, and a light blue sweater, which immediately strikes me as odd. In my memories, she's always wearing chef's whites. Her hair is down, dark curls wild and cascading over her shoulders. Another contrast to the way I remember her. In school, she always had her hair slicked back in a tight, no-nonsense bun. Zach whistles beside me.
The new catering chef is a smoke show.
I scoff at his reaction, but he's not wrong. She's still the same Tatum, but she looks different somehow. More mature. More beautiful. A pulse of attraction flares in my gut, catching me by surprise. If this wasn't Tatum Elliott and I didn't know better, I'd already be thinking of ways to ask the woman out. Fortunately, I do know better. Maybe on the outside, I mumble under my breath. Don't get me wrong. I didn't dislike Tatum when we were in culinary school. But we were from two different worlds. We still are. And she doesn't belong on Stonebrook Farm. Zach eyes me curiously.
What's that supposed to mean? Do you know her?
His gaze shifts back to Tatum, almost like it's hard for him to look away. There's a hunger in his expression that ignites something primal deep in my gut, and I find myself resisting the urge to bodily move in between Zach and the window to block his view. The impulse doesn't make any logical sense. I have no claim on Tatum, nor do I want one. Zach can look all he wants. We went to culinary school together, I say, proud of how evenly neutral my words sound. Olivia pulls up in a Stonebrook Farm Gator, one of the oversized utility vehicles staff use to get around the hundreds of acres of farm property. She climbs out and welcomes Tatum, pulling her into a hug like they're long-lost friends. They talk for a few moments. Then Tatum moves to the back of her SUV and opens the hatch. A giant black-and-white dog jumps out, tail wagging. Tatum crouches down and scratches the dog's ears, her smile wide as she says something to Olivia over her shoulder. Then they both start to laugh.
Yeah, I see it now, boss,
Zach says, his tone dry.
This woman looks like a real monster.
I never said she was a monster. I just don't... I bite my tongue. I promised my sister I wouldn't say anything to taint my employees' opinions of Tatum. They won't have to work with her directly, but it's still important they respect her. Which means I've already said too much to Zach.
Anyway,
I clear my throat, she's basically culinary royalty.
What does that mean? Zach asks.
Olivia and Tatum move toward the door, the dog falling into step beside her, and I feel a sudden need to flee, to look busy, to be doing something other than gawking at them through the dining room windows when Olivia brings her in to show her around. It means Christopher Elliott is her father, I say as I turn and head to my office. I pass the prep cooks already at work in my kitchen. Griffin and Willow are standing close to the saucier station, clearly arguing about something, but I don't bother to intervene. In another half hour, I'll gather the staff for a pre-dinner service meeting,
and I have every confidence they'll bring up their frustrations without me chasing after them. Zack is quick on my heels.
Hold up! You're telling me you went to culinary school with Christopher Elliott's daughter? Did you meet him? What's he like?
I refrain from saying any of the words that pop into my head at his question. My feelings about Tatum's father definitely won't help my staff maintain their respect. I lift my shoulders with feigned indifference. He's exactly what you might expect of a celebrity chef. Apparently, Zack's expectations are different than mine, because he's practically beaming with starry-eyed wonder.
Man! Christopher Elliott! That guy's amazing!
Sure. Amazing. If amazing means entitled, arrogant, and condescending. Zack follows me to my office, pausing in the doorway while I drop into my chair.
I still don't get it. What's the punchline?
He leans against my door jamb, his arms folded. I lift my eyebrows.
Come on, he says, like the question is obvious. Christopher Elliott's daughter? In the middle of nowhere, running a catering kitchen that serves farm-style weddings and family reunions?
I don't like that Zack so easily landed on the question that's been plaguing me since Olivia hired Tatum in the first place.
Don't forget the corporate retreats, I say.
Zack shakes his head.
Is she any good?
She's good enough to work in her father's flagship restaurant in L.A.
She worked at Levant?
Zack asks. I nod.
That's where she was before coming here.
That she started her career working with one of America's most famous chefs only highlights how different we are. Tatum was always my biggest competition in culinary school. Every exam, every evaluation, we might as well have been the only two people in class for how focused we were on beating each other. But it never felt like a fair fight. While she was doing unpaid internships, shadowing chefs at the finest restaurants in Atlanta, I was working my way through school in chain restaurants. Washing dishes, prepping vegetables, doing whatever I could to be in a kitchen, any kitchen. She didn't just have better knives, which she totally did. She had better everything. Better resources, better opportunities, extra time with professors, more exposure. All I had was grit. My parents helped a little, but I have three brothers and a sister, and back then the farm was still growing. They didn't have the resources that they have now, so all of us found ways to work our way through school, to fight for what we wanted. But Tatum Elliott didn't need grit. With her father paving the way in signed cookbooks and celebrity appearances, why would she ever need or want a job like this one? Zack moves closer, leaning against the edge of my desk.
I still don't get it. But I'm not complaining. It can't be a bad thing to have a woman with those kinds of connections hanging around. Especially not one who looks like that.
He nudges my shoulder, a grin splitting his face.
Be honest. Did you guys ever hook up? She looks like your type.
He lifts his hands and mimes the curves of a woman.
And by type, I mean she...
Knock it off, I say, offering him my sternest look. We don't have that kind of history, and I'd rather you not make other people think we do.
Chef?
Willow appears in the doorway, her eyes wide. I'd be happy for the distraction, and the end of Zack's insinuations, if Willow didn't look like she'd swallowed an onion whole. Hey, what's up? She glances over her shoulder, wringing her hands.
There's a goat in the kitchen?
I stare, dumbly trying to process what she's telling me.
What?
A goat? White, red bandana? It kind of looks like the one your brother-in-law is always putting on TikTok. I guess the back door was left open, the seafood guy was just here, and she just wandered up the loading dock. We tried to shoo her back toward the door, but she doesn't seem like she wants to listen.
I breathe out a sigh.
There is a goat in my kitchen. Sometimes I wonder why I ever left Charlotte. The city had nightlife, a foodie culture, and never livestock in my cooking space unless it was on the menu. I'm sure it's Penelope, I say. Tyler's out of town. She always wanders when he's gone. Olivia's husband is a videographer by trade, so his TikTok videos featuring the newborn goat he rescued when her mother rejected her are next level. Penelope has a fan base as big as my little brother, Flint's, and Flint has been nominated for a Golden Globe Award. Regardless of Penelope's fan base, she doesn't belong inside. Definitely not inside my restaurant. I'm halfway down the hallway when I hear the clop-clop of Penelope's hooves, followed by a loud bark, then an enormous clatter. I sprint the remaining distance, just in time to see Penelope running a lap around the large silver island in the center of my kitchen, Tatum's dog quick on her heels. My staff is in disarray. Griffin is holding a tray of what looks like pork chops high over his head, and another cook beside him is pressing an armful of cabbages against his chest. All over the room, food and knives are lifted as the animals bump and jostle their way through the kitchen. My soup chef barely manages to steady a jostled pot when the dog cuts a corner too closely and slams full body into the stove. I stand frozen, scanning the chaos. There is a goat in my kitchen. There is also a dog in my kitchen, and right now they're playing what looks like a full-contact game of tag. I don't even know what my life is anymore. Whatever it is, it violates all kinds of health codes, so I need to do something fast. Penelope lets out a concerned bleat, then makes a sharp right turn, cutting down the hall and heading from my office. I motion for Zack to follow the goat, then move around the outside of the kitchen toward the dining room, hoping I can cut off the dog before he chases them both. The dog is not slowing down, though. His attention is laser-focused on Penelope, and nothing or no one is getting in his way. I'm in front of the dining room door when Tatum comes barreling through, too fast for me to move out of the way before she collides into me with a grunt. Her hands slam into my chest, and I stumble backward before wrapping an arm around her waist to stabilize us both. Our eyes lock, and for a fraction of a second, all of the chaos around us melts away, and I lose myself in the gray blue of her eyes. But then Zack yells from the hallway, and Tatum blinks and steps away from me. She raises her fingers to her lips and lets out an ear-piercing whistle. The dog immediately skids to a stop, trotting over to Tatum like he doesn't have a care in the world. A door slams down the hall. Zack yells, "I've got the goat!" And just as suddenly as the chaos broke out, all is calm. Calm and a complete disaster. A trash can is on its side, its contents spilled. Utensils litter the floor. A pan of marinating chicken breasts is upside down on the tile, though it looks like most of the marinade hit Willow's chest before it landed at her feet. Olivia is beside Tatum now, her eyes telling me if I'm not on my best behavior, she'll never let me forget it. She may be younger, but my little sister is a fierce boss. Tatum steps forward.
"Lennox, I'm so sorry. I had no idea. I don't think he's ever seen a goat before. He's never behaved like this."
Her hand sinks to the dog's head, whose tongue is lolling in a way that makes him look like he's smiling. The image almost makes me laugh, but not in a ha-ha-ha-this-is-funny kind of way. More in a maniacal, barely-keeping-it-together way. The stress of her being here in the first place, mixed with an unexpected tug of attraction, is a lot on its own. And now my kitchen is in shambles, and it's too much. I'm feeling too much. My chef's coat is no longer an ill-fitting snowsuit. It's a straitjacket, and I need to escape. Olivia clears her throat.
"It was an accident," she says to Tatum, her voice smooth. I'm sure Lennox sees that as well as I do.
An accident, I echo. I run a hand through my hair and force a slow, deep breath. Look at my kitchen. That chicken has to marinate for at least 6 hours, and now it's all over the floor. It'll have to be off the menu for tonight, and that...
I can figure out a new chicken dish for you, Tatum says. She steps forward, her expression earnest. I can help.
She can help, because she's so much more qualified than I am. The urge to be away for a minute, away from this situation, from her, washes over me again. I hold my hands up. I think you've done enough. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have a kitchen to put back in order.
Lennox, I'm really sorry.
I step forward, closing the distance between us until I'm only inches away. I catch the scent of her, something floral and light that reminds me of Stonebrook's apple orchards in the fall. She lifts her eyes to meet mine, and I hold her gaze for a long moment. I told Olivia I would try, that I could be mature about this whole situation, but it already feels like I'm back in time, complete with all the insecurities and uncertainties that plagued me when I had to compare myself to Tatum every single day. Whatever transfixed me before has lost its hold. I don't need Tatum's help in my kitchen. I don't want Tatum's help. Just stay out of my kitchen, chef, I say, my tone cool. And I'll stay out of yours.
Chapter 2. Tatum. I have to box out of the U-Haul and carry it toward the restaurant's back door, nudging Toby ahead of me. Come on, boy. This way. If only I could strap a box onto him. Then he could help instead of just getting underfoot. If he were half as good at hauling boxes as he is at destroying kitchens, we'd finish in no time. But it's fine. I'm a strong, independent woman. Carrying all these boxes by myself is no big deal. I loaded the trailer by myself, after all. Though then, I was warmed by the California sunshine and fueled by a healthy dose of righteous indignation. Funny how strong not wanting to look weak can make you. With Dad looking on, expecting me to change my mind at any moment, strong was my only option. A bead of sweat trickles down my face, despite the cold outside, and I will myself to ignore it. My nose twitches with the effort, but the box is too heavy to shift. If I stop and lose my momentum, I'll never make it up this narrow stairwell. How many steps even are there? 80? 800? This has to be longer than a normal flight of stairs. My biceps are seconds away from giving out when suddenly I'm at the top, standing on a small landing next to Toby. I drop the box to my feet with a grunt, then fish a key out of my pocket. Olivia planned to show me the apartment, but then she was called back to the farmhouse to handle a disgruntled future bride and left me to my own devices, promising she'd be back tomorrow to introduce me to my staff and give me an official tour of the farm. Not that I'm in any hurry to see any of the Hawthorns again after making such a memorable first impression. I insert the key into the lock, a wave of trepidation washing over me. For the first time, I'm doing something all by myself, without my father standing beside me. I'm here. I say to myself, I'm here and it's fine. If I keep repeating it, maybe I'll start to believe it. I take a steadying breath, and Toby stands, like he senses how monumental this moment is. The door swings forward, creaking on its hinges, and I take a tentative step inside. The small space could fit inside my last place 15 times. But overall, it isn't half bad. The kitchen looks like it's been recently remodeled, and the furniture is clean, if a little dated. Everything has sort of a rustic mountain charm that makes me feel surprisingly at home, even though this place couldn't be more different than what I'm used to. Above the couch, a double window reveals the rolling pastures of Stonebrook Farm, then just beyond, the Blue Ridge Mountains melting into the distance. It's an incredible view, but I'm not sure there's a bad view anywhere on Stonebrook. The place looks like it belongs in a movie. I press my palms into the small of my back and arch backward, relishing the stretch of my tired muscles. Toby nudges against my leg, then nuzzles my hand with his cold, wet nose until I shift and start scratching his ears. This trick, huh? He leans in, and I tangle my fingers in his silky golden doodle coat. He needs a trim. I can hardly see his eyes. His hair has grown so long. But I left California so quickly, I didn't have time to get him in to see the groomer before I was tossing things in a U-Haul. Moving slowly wasn't an option. My father can be very persuasive, so I had to strike fast, before I lost my nerve, or I never would have made it out of the state. After my run-in with Lennox this morning, I'm wondering if I should have gone a little slower. Would it have been so terrible if Dad had managed to convince me to stay home? Home was safe, predictable. But it was also a life that didn't feel like mine. At least not at 2 a.m. when I chased a wild hare and actually applied for this job. Though I've second-guessed myself 1,000 times since then. Sheer momentum carried me forward, but I'll admit, there's a certain comfort in knowing that if I go back to California, Dad will be waiting for me with open arms. In fact, I think he probably expects it, something that makes me all the more determined to make this work. I love my dad. I'm grateful for everything he's done for me, but it's thrilling to be doing something, anything, without him holding my hand. Even if my new and independent life isn't exactly off to an auspicious start. Honestly, I don't think my first day at Stonebrook could have started any worse. I leave Toby lounging on the couch like he's the king of the apartment while I head back down the stairs to get another load of stuff from the U-Haul. I stop halfway down, my way blocked by a giant box moving up the stairs.
Hawthorne Complimentary Moving Service coming through, a deep voice says.
I backpedal until I'm in my apartment, my eyes wide as the box follows me, held securely in the arms of, is that Lennox? No, it's only someone who looks like Lennox. Same jawline, same eyes. He's a little lankier, his hair a lighter brown, and he doesn't have a beard like Lennox does, but still. He has to be a brother, especially since he just called himself Hawthorne Moving Service. The man shifts the box onto the table, but before I can say thank you or even hello, another man appears in the doorway, also carrying a box. If it's even possible, this man looks even more like Lennox than the first. His features are a little darker, and he's maybe a little more broody, though I could just be noticing the contrast between him and the other brother, who hasn't stopped smiling since he walked in. Either way, Hawthorne family genetics are strong. With the invasion of so much testosterone into my tiny space, Toby is immediately by my side, his body tense. I drop my hand to his ears, giving him a good scratch and shushing him so he knows he doesn't need to worry.
Sorry to barge in, the first guy says. Olivia said you were moving in and thought you might need some help.
He extends his hand.
I'm Brody Hawthorne. This is my brother, Perry.
I smile. Right, Lennox's brothers. It's hard not to be overwhelmed by the sheer manliness that has just entered my very tiny kitchen. Both of these men are married.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?